Lord.
Well, again, I know I'm echoing this again and again, but I hope that you guys are taking opportunity in the breaks to just make those connections, reintroduce yourself, and try to share what the Lord's doing in your ministries. That is certainly one of the goals of our weekend, is just to get more familiar with where everybody's working and who you're working with. So with that, I want to invite Kurt, who is, as he said, serving at Maranatha for a number of years. He was a missionary in Croatia, so another valuable resource for us, a guy who has experience in both worlds, both now as overseeing missionaries and as being one, coming to talk to us about the role of mission agencies, past, present, and future.
Thanks, Shane. Well, good morning. Good morning. You can turn in your notes. There's plenty of them, and I did that intentionally so that if I don't say something, you have it there, and you have plenty of resources to go and find some of the answers your church might be looking for. That is one of my hopes, that we walk away from this conference better able to bring back to our church what we as local churches need to help our people understand about missions. Yes, our elder teams and those who are on mission committees need to understand these things, but our church corporately, locally, needs to have a wide base and understanding of what it is that the church is supposed to be about and what missions is about. There's two books that just came out by Crossway. One is The Church in Missions, and the other is Missions in the Church. Valuable reads, both of them. You may not agree with every little thing that they say, but just to get that perspective that what we're doing on mission fields in Chad, Croatia, Italy, France, wherever you might be involved, needs to be ecclesiologically formed. And our church, locally, the sending churches or supporting churches also, likewise, should be missions-driven to some degree and have a good understanding of what they're to be doing. Well, in your introduction, you might see there just a satire. I prepared a five-minute little satire, but I'm going to give you the Babylon Bee headline that, you know, Paul, in between the lines, you will not read this in the New Testament, but Babylon Bee would put out there something about lost artifacts and manuscripts that describe, you know, that the mission agency that he worked with wrote, and we found those about how they recruited him and Barnabas. But I'm not going to share that with you. Just imagine and think about some of the stories we heard yesterday, even real-life encounters of how missionaries come to understand calling and come to understand where they're going to go, and then they go to their elders that they may or may not even know or have a relationship with, and then demand or ask in polite ways for money and prayer, and just make sure that we do that well. Well, sadly, that is the picture of our day. We do have mission agencies that do exist, and we have some choices to make as churches. Do we partner with them? Do we form our own? Do we deal with it, as it were? And so I want to talk about that this morning with you and hopefully discuss those things throughout the day, and that's part of what we have as churches that are banded together, is the task to try and do what we have well, and to some degree with what we have. We all came on different airlines, as was mentioned yesterday, for various reasons. Which one got us here the quickest, which one had the best perks or the most points, and we all got here. And to some degree, there's a sense in which mission agencies can help us to do that. A missionary once told me early on that you're not married to your mission agency. So if anything happens, feel free to sidestep. Feel free to create your own. And that's, in fact, what he did, and that's probably why he was telling me that, to recommend just doing what you're able to do better than them. But he said, you're married to your church, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. We were sent by our church. We were received by a local church. Chris Brackett was my elder for at least a year and a half, and they sent us out to a town called Bjelovar, an hour and a half away from there. And it was sweet to see the church involved in what we were doing, even there on the field. We didn't go under an agency because of their great bells and whistles. We went so that we would get there and be cared for and some of the support along the way. But I gave you a few definitions here. Agencies will define what they are in various ways, some with great precision on the role of the church, and they'll champion their accurate understanding and definition of the church's role. And then in practicum, it looks a little bit different oftentimes. So they will accurately say that they partner with churches. Probably better, churches partner with those means that will aid in their role and their task. So a better definition, I don't know if this is the best, but I kind of liked how Ryan Curry here said that they're going to partner with local churches to send and support qualified missionaries. And obviously we've said already, it's the church that makes sure that they are qualified. It's the church that raises them up and trains them up, and we're going to get into that a little bit more today. But they coordinate support, and they're a catalyst for collaboration and strategy among like-minded churches. And there are people out there that maybe many of you know who are great at collaboration, and they have a network vast around the world that can help people get to where they need to and logistically get set up where they need to. And maybe that's how the collaboration between our churches could be formed, is those like-minded churches with the right skills and abilities and gifts to make that happen. But there are already some of those people who just know everybody, like John Glass. He just, you know, he's a magnet for people. But we have to be careful that we don't just view the church as the means to the end, and the agency does the work. And that's what George Peters says, that they're not just the church in mobile form. Or yesterday was mentioned what Metcalf had said. And Metcalf's article, if you'll look in your references there, I'd recommend you read it and shake your head a lot. So he wants the church to cleanse their vocabulary from the term parachurch, and that the church in local form and the church in mobile form are together what is missions. And I disagree that it is not just the universal church doing what needs to be done so that the local church doesn't have to. There are many things we could say about missions, missions agencies, and in our Bible, we're just not going to find these parachurch ministries or para-missions organizations, but we do find organization and dependence and codependence between churches, and you might call them inter-church ministries, as we've talked about, rather than church ministries. There's a temptation for many in this age to claim that their missionaries and missions really is just part of the universal church, but it's individual churches locally that prepare and pray and commend and then send out their own. And that's why we do TES as well, so that we can not only train pastors who will go to the next town over where there's a need, but also to the next country or continent over. Churches need to commend their own to go for a specific task, oftentimes to a specific place for a specific amount of time, to a specific people, and when they come back, they give that report, and then they're resent, and so therefore they're recommissioned, and there's a relationship between the church and the missionary, and they may use the logistical and support and coordinating efforts of an agency to accomplish those means, but Christ promised us that he would build his church, brothers. So it's important that we understand what is a sending church, what is a supporting church, what is a receiving church, what's the role of the missionary, what's the role of a mission agency, or loose organizations collaborating together for the purpose of missions. There is value. There are cons as well, and we're going to discuss some of those. The agency's proper role is to help the church fulfill her calling and not to just appropriate that calling for itself. And as I mentioned, Metcalf's article actually argues that the local church acts like an agency, no, I'm sorry. The agency is trying to act like a church, and it is not. It is not. They don't have the same commitment to be proclaiming the whole counsel of God. They don't have the mechanisms of baptism, the Lord's Supper. They cannot church discipline. They are not the place where shepherding happens because they are not among the flock of God. They're not the shepherds. They may serve in a role. Sometimes it may be a temporary role while there is no church in a brand new field. And we have to think about that carefully too, of what does the missionary do if they're sent alone? Should they be sent alone to a new field? And what support do they have to be shepherded, to be encouraged? Because they themselves are also a sheep. But there is a distinction between the church and the mission agency. I've put together for you in your notes just a brief outline of yesterday, today, and tomorrow's mission agency. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on the yesterday portion. You can read short histories in various missions works on, for instance, David Doran gives a brief outline of the student movements of the early years. I put in here just a note on the Old Testament mentions. This is not church missions. Certainly we can learn from the Old Testament and what God was doing to proclaim His glory through His people Israel. But missions is an extension, is extending the church outward. Israel at that time, they were a witness impact and they were promoting a worldwide kingdom. And they were faithful locally. There was a faithful mobility. Individuals were sent to proclaim God's revelation in specific places. But just for the sake of our discussion, they had the needed care and support to accomplish what they were sent to do. So we can see signs of what helps us as the church today. When Isaiah was sent, he had the provisions and he had the care. And it's similar when Jesus commissioned his own disciples, right? He gave them instructions. He gave them provisions. He gave them promises to complete the task. And there was clearly defined organization. There was authority delegated, and certainly what better authority to follow than the Lord himself? I wish we had that personal authority. And yet we do in the Great Commission. So we have to think about that as well, of the authority God gave to his church to do the task that he commissioned us for. So when the disciples would come back, they reported and were accountable for what they did. And we can see examples of that when they weren't able to do what they thought they should have. And Jesus corrects and instructs and trains. So the church today is responsible for those they send. And a missionary is given directly or indirectly all the means necessary to carry out that task with accountability to the church. You can look at the appendix for those relationships of the New Testament account of how collaboration was done. I tried to be as thorough as I could with those roles of the sending church, the receiving church, supporting church. There are so many people and so many churches mentioned, and not just mentioned, but invited to participate in the next work that was needed. And sometimes it was temporary. That's why I labeled them co-laborers, because they weren't always going to be directly or long-term involved in the work that Paul and Barnabas and his cohort were involved in. They were laboring alongside, but maybe just for a short time or a specific purpose. In the instance of the brothers and Titus who brought the funds to Judea. So there's different levels of partnership, and missionaries were sent from churches. They were always commended by a church, except for one instance that Paul commended somebody, but I believe that he was commending them because he knew that church, or it wasn't a fully established church yet. That's also a reality, is the commending of one local gathering in a remote place. I appreciate those who labor in the state of Alaska, because you have these small villages of 15, 20 people in some villages. half an hour to an hour apart from each other. Vegetables may come once a month. And how do you effectively reach a people like that, that are spread out, and then form a gathering? Is it a regional gathering? It, just so many dynamics in Alaska to ponder and think about how we collaborate, because no one or two people could effectively reach that place so scattered. And so a lot of collaboration between organizations, churches locally, internationally happened there. But the New Testament account does give us a good glimpse at how that collaboration happens. And I only say that because that was the early glimpses of how people partnered. And mission agencies, in a sense, are or were started because there needed to be some support, needed to be some of that partnership, the collaboration, as we discussed last night. And modern missions, letter E in your notes, it was the failure of the churches to develop a missionary sense that drove certain missionary societies to adopt positions and policies which were unrelated to anything in the New Testament. So there's the idea that missions started because the church wasn't doing their job. And there's a sense of that that's true. But when was it ever going to be handed back over to the church? When were those same people going to say, you need to get your act together, and you need to get your act together, and give it back to the church? So individuals from churches did start the missions movement or the missions society movement. But in some instances where the church at large was clearly failing to fulfill in their mission vocation responsibility, with dedication, initiatives by groups of Christians in obedience to the gospel seemed to be perfectly in order. So there was some organization. There was some collaboration, but it was between individuals. And that's just not the picture that we get from the New Testament that shows us, at least descriptively, that churches, those local gatherings, were interested in the work that was being done, not just individuals, because of their commendation. So in the beginning, of course, we have some sweet collaboration of those early mission societies, organization, mission boards. They're called different things. It's even hard to look them up because so much is written on missions, and you get 98% of it that sounds really spot on about the church's role, and then you only have a few mentions of the mission agency. When you go to the mission field, it's 98% is talked about the organization and the family environment and its own entity. And they will commission you in their basement with a few of their leaders and some of their secretaries laying hands on you to send you out. And I think they do a disservice to the missionary to, as Joel James says, distract and distort what is the mission. In colonialism and post-colonialism, there were trends of confusion with the pioneer work of countries expanding their reach throughout the world. We talked this morning about Barbados and the English influence rather than the French influence in Barbados. Well, with all that colonial activity, the missionary was also often confused with that pioneer. And so you had a blending of society and spiritual needs. And with foreign ideas came foreign wealth, and the expansion of empires was paired with the expansion of the Western message of salvation, and a confusion between what is the gospel and what is necessary to thrive as a society. What followed was a swinging of the pendulum and sharing less than the gospel. And these were the early stages of contextualization. Contextualization might be pointed back to even colonialism and a reaction to colonialism. So then you have the replacement of the agency for the church. In an effort to ease the burden of churches, at least that's how it's often framed, if churches aren't going to do anything, people do have to pick up the mantle. Or if churches want to do something, but mission agencies are already doing so. There is a confusion, like the student volunteer movement, Doran talks about, that they spoke of the church and its grandeur, but at a practical level, they never held the primacy of the local church. And that's where there was a drifting. And he just outlines those wrong views of the church, authority, motives, administration. And that's what I found in the agency I was with. I was with a big box agency. Send International had really good roots, pastoral, I would say, leadership for many decades. And when this is what happens at the institutional level of seminaries as well, is when there's a shifting of the leadership from pastors and churches to presidents and CEOs, you are going to have a shift from what will feed the church and what will feed academia. And in the mission field, it's the same with the need for pragmatism and the social gospel rules the day because there's so much need and people are just starving everywhere. But letter E there, you just have a catering to the members rather than the mission. I talked to colleagues in other countries and just comparing notes a bit, and they said, man, I would love to be doing that. So we just go to our baseball camps, and it seems like we're ministering to all the missionaries and not to the mission field. And I feel like we're on the sideline while you're in the game. And that's sad. One writer calls it the hot tub mentality, where we all just sit around and look at each other and enjoy the benefits of what we're doing. And that's really dangerous when mission agencies get too big for their britches. It's all about the hierarchical structures and the teams, and everyone needs to have a role in the agency and be serving the team in some way. And one missions pastor locally in Grand Rapids told me, are you going to be doing general work or are you going to be doing front lines work? And I said, I don't plan on doing general work unless I lose a couple hours sleep. I ended up kind of being a field leader for our organization, and I benefited from it because I was able to encourage the two other missionaries that were there to be doing the right kind of work. But he said, we don't want generals. We just don't need any generals on the field. We need people who are doing the work of the mission and seeing the gospel move forth, churches planted and established and equipped well. So these are the identified misplaced focuses Doran gives. And just a comment on mission drift. In 1910, there was a conference in Edinburgh, and the PCUSA agency out of that proposed an ecumenical approach to redefine the task of missions as everything from gospel proclamation and church planting to humanitarian aid. And this is the drift from founding values and doctrines and goals, and it happens, it's been happening at a faster rate since World War II. And this is where Joel James comes in and says, you know, in his article, What's the Mission of Missions? When we have social gospel as even a part of the formula that we've put together, the social gospel is a distortion of the true gospel. And social reform has been an intoxicating, all-consuming distraction, he says. It's a distortion of what really is the focus. What is the message? What is our apologetic methodology? And it is a distraction to what we really should be doing. So many missionaries are sent, and whether this is the fault of the church or the agency, it could be both. They arrive on the field in the name of church planting, not sure if they're even an elder or a deacon. And 3 years later, after language school and cultural assimilation and trying to figure out what they're doing with their life, they then realize they need to figure out what they're going to do with their ministry. And they start a parachurch organization locally. And they support the church in some way, and it may or may not really feed what's needed. But the mission field is often littered with its own little parachurch organizations. And what we have is parachurch propagating parachurch rather than the church propagating the church. Local churches send missionaries to start local churches who then are able to propagate the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what happened in Ephesus. That's what happened in other hubs in the New Testament. And we have to just be careful that we don't distort or distract from the main thing. The evangelist D.L. Moody, he often warned the churches of that era around the turn of the 20th century, so around 1900. He liked to say that when Christians go to the world with a loaf of bread in one hand and a Bible in the other, they'll usually find that sinners will just take the bread and leave the Bible. And this is, of course, the same problem largely that Jesus faced when he fed the masses in John 6. And so we have a choice to make. Are we going to bring something less than the gospel? Are we going to bring something in addition to the gospel? We have to stand firm on what is the gospel, what is the church, what is the leaders of the church, what is the role of the church. And what's happened, these implications for our agencies, missionaries and mission agencies are often, when they face financial troubles, they need to rebrand themselves. They need to reestablish their name, their image and likeness. They need to just shore up their donor support and maintain status quo. And then what happens is they redefine what's the authority of the church, what's the identity of the church, what's the means of the church to bring forth the Lord's plans, what is the leadership of the church. Now, we saw that as we were transitioning off the field. Thankfully, I was allowed to sign the old covenant agreement with my agency that still remained faithful. But I saw the draft of the new one, and I wasn't going to sign it because they were changing those things. They were promoting women in leadership in the church. They were encouraging, what do they call them, kingdom growth goals, and had 14 areas of change on the mission field that they wanted to make sure were happening. And I was able to check about 11 of the boxes out of the 14 because they were means to accomplishing the goal. Did I work with homeless people? Yes, because there were homeless people and they crossed paths with me. Did we educate women and children? Well, sure, because we want to educate everyone with the gospel, right? That's the education that we bring. So there were means that they were making the goal, and that was concerning to me. And when they came out with their new proposal of their rebranded mission and vision, there was about a third that kind of shook their fist and they retracted from their original plans because they didn't have accountability. They didn't have the church accountability. They weren't grounded in centrally what is the church. So in some fields, they were gathering and they were more like a club. They would invite believers sometimes and then not invite them others, and they were calling themselves a church. And I just wondered, who are the leaders? Where's the discipline? Where's the functionality of churches? They're shallowing, they're lowering the standard of what the Bible teaches us about what we are doing. Well, let's talk about today's mission agency, bring us up to some of the current things we see. We just have a few minutes here, but there's different levels of relationship. Some agencies are going to be very compatible with our churches. We can't throw them all out just because some of them or many of them are doing things we don't like or they shouldn't do. There's some that actually are very helpful, and that's number three, the smaller agencies with a partnership among multiple sending churches. That's what we're proposing in a sense, is something of a collaboration with some formality, legal and structured. And yet there's even more relationships. So number five, individual church with its own board under its own supervision. Peter Smith up at Hope in Christ in Detroit sent out their son under their own church with no formality. So different situation because Peter spent years in the Czech Republic and his son grew up there, so they have some established relationships and such, but there are different relationships and there's different degrees in which a mission agency helps or takes over. And so you have the big box that are going to have all the bells and whistles down to the clearinghouses. And I listed a few of those in the footnotes. In Croatia, we've helped four brothers, national pastors, get connected through IGO. And it's a loose way. Clearinghouses are a loose way for us to choose how and what they do and where, and be more involved, but with some of the structures already in place. Letter C, the benefits of mission agencies. Certainly there are unique challenges today, and the missionary will have spiritual obstacles on the field that we won't be able to care for them in the same way, 6,000 miles away, as we can the brother who's sitting in our seats on Sunday morning. There's a distance factor that makes it difficult. It's an obstacle. I'm not saying it's impossible for the sending church to be more involved, but I'm looking forward to this afternoon discussing the role of the receiving church as well in the pastoral benefits there of the receiving church. There's cultural barriers, governmental challenges, legal hurdles, financial difficulties, moral temptations, and housing problems. Yes, there are problems that we also face in our own local context, but these are often met with solitude and lack of resources and just a different level of accountability because there are just so fewer believers in each church, and sometimes distance plays a factor as well. We never lived closer than 45 minutes to the church that we were a member of while we were in Croatia. So at any given time, I myself as a missionary was under the shepherding care of Chris Brackett and Mishko Horvatek, but from 45 minutes away. So there are unique challenges that we have to be aware of as local churches try diligently to do what they are called to do, send and train up and commend for the work that they're going to do. And we have to trust them to some degree that they really are equipped and that they will navigate what they have before them and seek out the help that they need from local churches or their sending church or supporting churches. And like Paul, send help. Ask for help when needed. So the task, the church today is still important both in sending and receiving, and this really cues up Kerry Hardy for later. Just thinking about all the ways that mission agencies can help. There's linguistical challenges, and there's new fields, and there's closed countries that an organization can effectively help us as the church get them to the field, get their ticket in hand, so to speak, and get them the resources that they might need, the publishing availability so that when they're translating a new language that they're able to do that. We do need help in the financial realm to make sure that the funds can get there and legally for our sake. And there's different rules in different countries for visas and standing, whether or not they may need a platform there and how that will work out. So I have one brother. He's actually an author as well. I think I referenced him. Dr. Burns, he is in Thailand. He's working under the auspices of teaching at the Asian Biblical Theological Seminary, but he also is training pastors in making sure that the language support for all of those dialects in the hills of Thailand are available. And he also is the president of Alaska, our Great Commission Alaska. So all that to say, with linguistic challenges and visa issues, he's started two organizations for enabling the work that needs to be done where it needs to be done. And under the guidance of the church. So there needs to be some level of on-field ministry accountability, number six there. We need eyes on the actual work, make sure it's being accomplished. And the sending church may be able to do that. It may be a team that is sent together. It could be the receiving church. It could be other missionaries that we have entrusted or delegated authority to in order to see that the work is done, and when they come back and report, it's being done effectively, and hold them to that work that we sent them for. I'm going to breeze through the final few pages. There's challenges, there's problems, mistrust. We talked about theological issues where the social gospel, efficient movement-focused missions. Just this summer, the SBC and Nine Marks talked about the difference between movement-based missions and church-based missions. That's one reference point if you want to go and check out that. I think it was a conference. But that's vital for our understanding of the different problems that are in our landscape. But it does come back to, what is the church doing? What will we as the church do? And that's leading to the future mission agency. Where do we go from here? Do we just toss it aside and start afresh? Do we take the services and the help that they can give the church in fulfilling those tasks? Because listen, it has to be sustainable. It has to be able for churches to do this. Our churches of our considerable size. The churches that we plant on the field, they're going to be 20 to 50 people in many contexts. I'm not sure how big the churches grow in Chad, but when we talk about church planting strategies, we don't have a core team of 20 people. That is the church, year five. That's what we're praying for, is a baptism a year. And so where do we go from here? Do we try and do this on our own, or do we use some of the resources that are available? Because some are simply a la carte services or clearinghouse services that we could utilize. But here's some things to discuss. For your church, you need to have a clear philosophy of missions. Write it down. Edit it annually. Try and figure out, what is it that we need to be doing? Borrow from other people. Borrowing is a great spiritual gift to have. Actively train and send your own. Are you promoting missions in your own church more than Liberty University? Because it matters. It matters. Obviously, we have an urgency in the gospel that people have an expiration date, and we need to preach the gospel to them in that context so that that context can have a local church that will spread the word, spread seeds. But God isn't so urgent. He's not so needy that he can't wait. So do it well, and be actively training and sending qualified and prepared missionaries. Three, have wise partnerships with agencies. Some can help, so pick and choose which ones are going to effectively do that. And if a missionary is with an agency and they come to your door, or they're within your church, say, I think you need to choose more wisely. Think about, what is your missiology? If you're a missionary, you should have some idea of how this work should be accomplished. So who are you partnering with? Send International was for a few years partnering with Fuller Seminary to train missionaries in their missions program and giving them a great rate. And I said, what are you doing? Why is this happening that I get to wave my send flag and next to it's a Fuller flag? I'm not doing that. Why are we doing this? And they said, well, it's the missions department. It's not the theology department. Are you kidding me? What do you think is informing their missiology? How could they not be on the same? I mean, obviously, in some institutions like that, they may not be on the same page. But in my research on mission agencies, Fuller Seminary is Metcalf. It's not on the right page. They are not helping to further the kingdom of God through the means that God gave us, the church. So also, we should be thinking about co-laboring and partnering ministry church to church. We need to establish clear areas of responsibility in strategic planning, crisis management, and this is where it gets into your missionary. What is their role? How should they expect you as their sending church to oversee their needs on the field? Are they doing the right work? and discover if they are. Looking back at Chris's session, are they in the right location? Are they still working with the right missionaries? Are they partnered with the right people on the field, the right receiving church? And so stay tuned for Carrie's session. Are they linked with supporting churches? And they're sending church and they're supporting church. Are they talking? One of the sweetest things I got to do about 10 years ago was help one of our missionaries and connect with all of his church's support base to accomplish something. It was really, I really appreciated that. And we weren't all on the same page, but we all had the same goal of helping that one missionary. So things we should think about with our church and missionary. And for the agency, we have some options for these agencies. I wish some of them would close. I really do. They don't need to exist going on, becoming larger and more self-focused, intra-focused. Eddie Arthur says, if the role of agencies to support churches in their mission, if that's the role and they are not serving churches, the agencies no longer have a function. And agencies might even have the goal to start up with the goal of closing once their mission is accomplished, to do a specific work in a specific place and then be done once it's done. Some could reform and become more of a training arm and encourage churches to do what they should be doing. There is new work needed, and so when we start new collaborative efforts, we need to do that well. Some old work maybe just needs to be refined and brought together. And I saw that with Pioneers Church Partnership. This is a big box agency, Pioneers, but they did well to get churches at the table and say, you need to be doing this work. How involved in missions are you? It's not our job, it's yours. And I appreciated that. Number five, we should have written formal partnership agreements if we're going to work with agencies. Get it down on paper. What is your role and what is their role? And how will that work? And think about situations, crisis moments, exit strategies. What happens when there's moral failure? Is there a receiving church that you can partner with in that field for the care that they need, for the discipline in some cases? No missionary is perfect, and they need the love and care that we owe our own congregants here. And then six, as much as an agency is supporting the work of the church, they providentially have been used, and we can see how thankful we are to God for faithful men and women who banded together. And, you know, and as an example, the Philippines is a nation where much work has been done because of that organization. So if agencies were made up of faithful churchmen, or let's put it this way, as much as those collaborative efforts are made up of faithful churchmen, that's where we're going to see success in these organizational structures. So what it looks like in practice is some understanding that there aren't perfect churches, but that's the primary means by which God has chosen to, that's his program for this age. So we should work primarily in that way, and we use various programs, organizations to fulfill what God's given to us. So I hope that's a help, and I'm sure that there's more. I'd love to hear from each of you about your experiences and perspective, what you've learned about mission agencies, but more importantly, it just comes back to Christ promised that he will build his church. He will not build his parachurch. So if they go away someday, great. If they continue, that's okay too. Let's be the church first. Shane? Almost.
Test, test, yeah. Well, thank you, brother, for that. It's like all of the, like the other seminars, just so much that you could dive into there that I have a lot of questions. I had written down a bunch of questions, but as we're going through this, I was really focused in on page 4 here, the benefits of mission agencies. because we could just spend time going through that whole list of things there. Because one of the driving questions that I have when I think about the role of mission agencies, past, present, future, is how is technology and all that that has now opened up a world of information to us, how's that making mission agencies less necessary? They used to be the place that had the sort of inside and secret knowledge culturally, logistically, legally, into all these fields that were the churches just had no way of knowing. And that seems like it's been, so many of the walls have been broken down from a technology. So I guess my first question is tagging on to something we mentioned yesterday. I mean, from your vantage point, how do you think technology is going to change the role of mission agencies?
Well, it already has. I think that's probably the knock on it, is a church would say, well, now we have access to our missionary. We can instantly FaceTime whether we do or don't, but we can have direct access to our missionaries with a click of a button. But there's certainly some missing elements that you can't get through a screen. Mm-hmm. The same reason you visit your in-laws, you don't just do it FaceTime, right? There's an incarnational... It depends on the in-laws. Well, I have amazing in-laws. But, yeah, there's an incarnational ministry where you need to be face-to-face with someone. You know, in Japan, they say you need to read the air. You need to understand the air in the room between the people. There's an element in which you need to know people face-to-face to really understand. Now, how much do you need to understand is a point of debate, certainly. But technology makes it easier for churches to connect, to stay informed, to be involved. It also is a great temptation and a distraction for the missionary to remain a member of their own church. Mm-hmm. And that's something I didn't get into, is what is membership for a missionary? And are they a member of their agency? Are they a member of their sending church? Are they a member of their receiving church? And Carrie's going to answer all those questions later.
To some extent, it's interesting you mentioned technology, because that kind of bleeds over into accountability. Mm-hmm. What's your policies on the use of technology, both the amount of time you spend and even the things that you may post, the things you may discuss, because I think it's going to be increasingly a problem as we send younger and younger missionaries who live their lives online, and they're, like you said, living that life still with old friends, and sometimes discussing things with their friends they need to be discussing with their elders, online. So it's an issue. Going through this list here, there's a lot of things here that I guess my question for you to dive a little bit deeper is the benefits of mission agencies. If we're a church that wants to operate without a mission agency, just mm-hmm. be totally local church oriented, you're looking at those things. Are there things that, first of all, that you think just a church cannot do? Or are there things that you just believe it would be really difficult for a local church to do without accessing the expertise that would be found in a mission agency?
Well, mission agencies are made up, assumingly, of members of local churches. They should be. And so I would answer, no, there's nothing on this list that a church can't do. Most churches can do some of these things. Many churches could do some of them very, very well. And many churches are going to look at the list and say, I just don't know that we have the time, the resources. I know there's one guy in our church. He just had a young child. He could do some of the tech stuff, maybe on the weekends. And so there is some degree to which a church or churches can accomplish many of these things. And I'm not saying, mm-hmm. I'm definitely not saying we have to have an agency. I'm just saying these are benefits that mission agencies have done, and whether it's because the agency told the church this is what we do, or the church said you do this, the problems that led to the current situation are vast, but churches can do this.
Yeah.
And it's just how much commitment does each local church in their context, whether it's 75 people or 750 people, are they willing to do and able to? And maybe they can.
Yeah, I would, to oversimplify the issue, you know, we would chuckle at a guy who says, well, you know, I think I can prepare a pastor because I've attended churches before. That would be sufficient for a guy to prepare a pastor to lead a church. And
yeah.
I do think we have to be careful not to be naive to think, well, I've met a missionary before, so therefore, you know, we have everything that's necessary to prepare a missionary. I mean, you're going to take on some things here that as you get into them, you start realizing, wow, that goes deeper and deeper and deeper. So there's obviously access to experienced people would be critical, I think. Mm-hmm. And some churches have more access to experienced missionaries, cross-cultural experienced people, and some people have less than that. And so, you know, if you don't, you're going to have to go outside of yourself. And that's where mission agencies often have a lot of experience.
Just as an example, the emerging church largely started because they ignored church history.
Yeah.
And if we ignore the local history of the field that we're trying to go reach, and we have no idea what that's like, we can go and we could visit a new field and with our American eyes perceive what's going on. But if there's a missionary who lives 10 minutes down the road who's been there for 15 years, he's going to help understand that in ways that we couldn't. And it doesn't have to be an agency that helps do that, but there needs to be some kind of help. And that's why I put together the appendix, because in the New Testament, there's clearly relationships that are already formed to get to that point. And they're fluid, they're flexible, they're not necessarily rigid, but they are commended by the local church, those who helped.
Yeah. Well, again, we could just go through each one of these line by line and talk about the complexities of that.
I wanted to spend more time on the authority section, but again, we'll just leave that to Carrie Hardy.
Yeah. Any guys have questions? We can take a few before we take our coffee break. Our third, our fourth coffee break, whatever it is for you guys. So the question for the recording is, what do you see as the role of clearing houses in the current climate of missions?
Well, there are missionaries who, they can roll up their sleeves and do a lot of the things that a mission agency does. Not every missionary needs to go to a conference three times a year. So the clearing house is going to get the funds where they need to be. They're going to give some accountability, transparency financially for those supporting churches. Transparency of they are doing the work, so they have some standard. I think they're a great benefit. That's likely what we would have done second term had we gone back. So I don't, the role, they...
Is that
they
a trend? Do you see that as a bigger trend or not?
We were, when we came back on furlough or home assignment, our agency actually showed us this graph of different agencies and the agency fee structure. And it was like everywhere from 11% to 17% or 8%. I don't know what the beginning was. And we were like towards the top. And I was like, what's the low one? I want to go with, I said that out loud. I said, what are these? Because they just get too high. And so when you can have a clearinghouse and they're taking a cut of 3 or 4% versus 12 to 15 once you stack up all the fees, I mean, there's a stewardship there. I feel like if a missionary is thinking about that, but I don't know if that answers your question. I think that they should be a trend, and they enable. Here's the global dynamic too. It's not just the West sending missionaries anymore. So if we've created this mega monster mission agency model that all the world has to follow, do South Koreans and Filipinos have to go with an agency in order to accomplish God's will in Turkestan or? Kazakhstan? No, they don't. So I think the clearinghouse just enables some of the details to fall into place.
Other questions?
Yes.
I would say that is certainly going to be very much driven by the local church elders. I mean, I think there's an axiomatic truth to what you're saying, that the budget, just like a family, is going to reflect priorities. And, you know, everyone needs to kind of think about that to some extent. It's also going to be informed by what you call missions. You know, if you're including local, domestic efforts in your missions budget, versus some people who would keep that only international and frame it up that way. And then, you know, some churches are newer like us. I mean, we're still a fairly young church, started in 1997. We are in the phase of building and putting a lot towards capital needs. Churches that have kind of plateaued in that area and aren't as focused on capital expenditures would probably be pushing that envelope a little bit more, hopefully be pushing that envelope a little bit more. So I wouldn't want to take what we do as a paradigm for what every other church should do just because the needs of our church is a little bit different. There are some rules of thumb that people generally follow. Certainly, you know, smaller churches are going to be doing, you know, 50% of their budget towards staffing. And, you know, you don't want to cross that threshold. You're going to be in a lot of danger. For us, you know, I was just sharing with our elders this last elders retreat that I would love to hit the quarter, quarter to capital needs, quarter to staffing, quarter to local ministry, and a quarter to missions would be, I think, a sweet spot for us in this season because we still have a lot of capital expenditures. But I wouldn't want to impose that on anybody. Paul would probably be able to, I'm sure you guys probably address some of that in pastoral ministry classes, budgeting, and... Yeah. My personal sense is, having spent a little time in the mission field and knowing, you know, kind of what the needs are there, if the Great Commission is as important as we say it is, we all should be probably constantly asking ourselves, are we doing enough in that, and constantly trying to push the envelope a bit. I also know that stewardship and the use of missions funds mission agencies are oftentimes not great stewards of the resources. So it's not even so much how much of our budget we are dedicating, but are we deploying our resources in the wisest possible way? We might be more effective with 20% of our budget going to missions than somebody who's doing 40%. But splashing it around in a lot of ways that are just really not well stewarded.
I would just add to that to teach your churches a high view of the church and then missions as well, like I said. But your missionaries, if they're coming with an agency, may be encouraged to only look at individual support. And that is a trend of you just need to find the individuals because that's what's working right now. That's what they're being told. And I pushed back on that personally, and I said, no, I feel strongly about the role of churches sending missionaries, and so I'm going to go to churches. And individuals, of course, are going to give. So you don't necessarily want to be hard and fast that your people can't give individually to missionaries on the side, and you know, above and beyond, but that's where just a theology of giving comes into play.
All right, I want to make sure we have plenty of time for our break, so we're going to take a break here until 10:30, I believe, is our next session. Yeah, am I right on that?
Mm-hmm.
So plenty of time for you guys to kind of continue to discuss these things amongst yourself, and then we'll be back here at 10:30 for, who's next? Carrie, yes, the highlight of the weekend.